Hi, this is Austin Hill. Hey, thanks for checking out this podcast from Austin Hill in the Morning. Now, you can hear our program live weekday morning, 6 till 8 Central Time. There are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows. They're available online. Our web address, of course, myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Start your day connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the Morning.
Well, I would concur, it most certainly is a beautiful day, even with precipitation. I know for some of us, we get a little weary of rain, and certainly we get very weary of snow later in the year, right? But that said, welcome to our program, and welcome to Monday. It is 6:04, and this is Faith Radio. I'm Austin Hill. I'm here weekday mornings 6 till 8 as you get your day started, where we seek to be informative and challenging, hopeful and helpful. As we seek to connect faith to life. And I'm just back now. I wasn't here Friday. I was out after last Thursday. But a hearty and very personal thank you for those who partnered with us during our Fall Share fundraiser events. And it was my first time actually being a part of one of these events, and at least in a direct way being a part of it. And wow, thank you for the feedback on what we're doing here. Thank you for standing with us as we seek to do what we believe is some important work and go about doing what we're doing in a way that we can be used for God's eternal purposes. We had a great Fall Share fundraiser event last week. And it was very fun. Got to get acquainted and hear from a lot of listeners that I might not otherwise have interacted with. And so thank you for being a part. Of course, you can always come on board and partner with anytime, 24/7, at our mobile-friendly website, myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com. But it was a good week last week. I hope it was for you as well. Hope your day is off to a good start also. Now, we have some very disconcerting things going on in our world that we need to talk a little bit about. We've had, and this is negative, this is gruesome, this is terrible. I wish it wasn't staring us in the face. But I really do believe that we do ourselves and our families and our country and our world, and quite frankly, we do a disservice to God's plans and purposes in the world, I think, if we ignore the evil that surrounds us. It doesn't mean we live in fear, doesn't mean we live with anxiety about this, but there was yet another beheading, a very high-profile beheading, this time of a British gentleman by this terrible group called the Islamic State, IS, or sometimes referred to as ISIS, the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, although they are very intent on expanding well beyond Iraq and Syria. And the Prime Minister of the UK, David Cameron, he has spoken out about this in very strong, very powerful moral terms. I have not heard anything from our president or anybody from, really, I haven't heard anything stateside on this issue. Not much anyway in terms of any military or governmental authority. But my friends, my brothers and sisters, this is really, really serious stuff. And is this group, Islamic State, are they here in the United States? Are they setting up some sort of terrorist attack here in the United States? I don't know the precise answers to those two questions. I have a hunch, personally. I have an instinct, and you probably do too. If you have no instinctive thought on that or no opinion about that, I would prayerfully and respectfully admonish you to get educated on this issue and form an opinion. Doesn't mean that our own individual opinions reign supreme and control everything that we do, but I have to tell you, in a spirit of transparency and honesty, I really do believe as though I'm living at an extraordinary time. And by the way, chronologically you are too, but we are living at an extraordinary time where so many of our fellow Americans, so many people throughout the Western world, are in very grave denial about the threats, the potential dangers to our own country. We have never known a United States of America, except really on that one day, September 11, 2001. But we've really never known a United States of America that wasn't fairly secured domestically. It hasn't always been that way over the course of the history of this country. But we have been blessed, those of us who are alive today, we've been blessed to know a United States of America that has been secured and fairly cohesive because of the due diligence and the hard work and the sacrifice, sometimes the sacrifice of lives of those who have gone before us. I would liken it to the call and the service of the gospel of Christ itself. I'm not saying that the enterprise of the United States of America and the call of the gospel are the same thing, but there are similarities there. We stand on the shoulders of giants, so to speak. But if we forget what creates a cohesive society, if we abandon our understanding of what creates a safe culture, a safe domestic culture, we're apt to lose it. So anyway, we'll talk more about yet another beheading of a Westerner, and I've got some thoughts on the moral and spiritual and theological implications of this. And it's maybe not exactly what you think it is. But we'll get to that coming up later this morning here on Austin Hill in the Morning. Also, we've got a very interesting development in the pro-life movement as it pertains to non-Christian, otherwise secular, college and university campuses. You will meet a young lady from Canada. She's about ready to speak and debate the issue of abortion on campus at the University of Minnesota. She will join us in studio later this morning. And I guess my first question is, how does this work? But it's fascinating. She'll have the answer for us. So all this and more still to come here on Austin Hill in the Morning. When we continue, let's talk a little bit about yet a new technological development, another one that may very well involve scooping up more of your private personal data. We'll check in with our tech expert, Scott Barstow, next. It's 6:09. This is Faith Radio, and I'm Austin Hill. Morning at 6:11. This is Faith Radio, where we seek to connect faith to life. And I'm Austin Hill. I'm here weekday morning 6 till 8. As you get your day started, and thank you for being here. Still to come, so much ahead. We'll check in. We'll hear from our great friend Dr. Linda Mental some new thoughts on a very old and long-standing and crippling problem, the problem of clinical depression. Dr. Linda Mental, health expert, lots of books that she's written. She's with us every couple of weeks or so. She's the relationship doctor. She'll weigh in on that coming up in a little less than an hour from now, so stand by for that. We were under the impression that we'd be able to check in with our good friend Scott Barstow. We heard from him. He is a entrepreneur, tech expert, and we had a problem, and he had to step away, so we'll look forward to connecting with him as soon as we can, actually, but we will be addressing this issue. It's a new gadget. Now, over the last week, 10 days or so, there's been a lot to look at in the world of consumer electronics and technology. And you may not think, you may not be a gadget person or into consumer electronics and technology, and you may be saying, well, what is that, what is all this tech stuff have to do with my Christian faith? Why are we even talking about this? But I would respectfully suggest to you that success of tech companies, their financial success, really is very profoundly important in terms of what drives our U.S. economy. And that hits home in Main Streets and Wall Streets and everywhere. Anyway, the Apple computer company, they have basically prior to, as recently as last month, they had not introduced any new products for, as far as I could tell, for about 4 years. I mean, we've seen all the iPhones that they had to offer over a four-year period as of last, three weeks ago or so. Just nothing new. And innovation drives these marketplaces, drives these companies, and it drives a good bit of the global economy. So new developments and new, more efficient, better ways of doing things are very important to this sector of the global economy. And, of course, 4 years ago, their CEO at the Apple company, Steve Jobs, passed away. He was the innovative master, probably one of the greatest inventors in the world of my lifetime. I put him up there with Thomas Edison, quite frankly. And so with the genius innovator, Steve Jobs, gone, a lot of people are saying, well, how long is this Apple company going to last? Well, they launched a new iPhone, the iPhone 6, And that's getting a lot of very positive reviews. But there is this facet of it that's... I'm not an iPhone person, by the way. I should make that clear. I do have a smartphone. It's an Android. And iPhone and Android are both very good. I'm not particularly partial or partisan with one over the other. Some people get very contentious between the two. Oh, mine's better than yours, that kind of thing. I just don't do that. I just want something that works, meets my needs, and don't disrupt me. You know, I don't want to have to download a new app. The one that I had was working just fine. You know, but sometimes the best, most functional of computers and phones become obsolete, and sometimes by design. But there are concerns with, I have concerns about this Apple iPhone 6, in as much as there is personal data storage and collection components to it that basically is intentionally trying to replace your wallet. Replacing your wallet. Now, what's up with that? Imagine all, think of all the personal data that you keep in your wallet, your pocketbook, your purse, what have you. I mean, credit card numbers doesn't even begin to capture it all. And Apple is saying, oh, we'll store all that for you. And this, to me, is fraught with potential for data security breaches and violations and having your most personal information, health records, and who knows what all, falling into the hands and databases of the wrong people. So we'll pick up on that and keep our eyes on that, but that's something that we should all be very much aware of. 617, it's Faith Radio. Good morning. It's Monday. I'm Austin Hill.
To Austin Hill in the morning. Join the conversation by calling 877-933-2484.
618. Whoops, make that 619. We're on to it. Let me assure you that, says the as the second tick away. 619, it's Faith Radio. And we're glad you're here. Thank you for being with us. Thank you for listening. Thank you for partnering with us. Find us anytime at myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com. At about 7:35 this morning, we will welcome to the microphone a lady that I find very intriguing what I've seen of her online. Never met her in person, but she'll be in our studios. Her name is Stephanie Gray. Now, Stephanie is quite an international public speaker, quite frankly. She began a speaking career, a ministry, if you will, at the age of 18. That was back in 1999. She also co-founded a national organization in Canada called the Canadian Center for Bioethical Reform. Now, I'm hard-pressed to think of a lot of 18-year-olds who could even define for you what bioethics is. But suffice it to say, she has a very interesting career going around Canada mostly, but she comes into the United States and travels into other nations off the North American continent from time to time, talking about what she calls the truth of abortion. Now, you can find this. This is very interesting. Again, this is not for the faint-hearted, but this is a wake-up call that I believe all of America needs. And it's not coming from within America. It's coming from our neighbors to the north in the country of Canada. I would invite you to visit a website. It's called unmaskingchoice.ca. .ca is the designation for URLs, web addresses in the country of Canada, CA. But unmaskingchoice.ca. There are articles, there are videos, and quite frankly, there are very graphic photos of, quite frankly, what gets left behind in the aftermath of an abortion. Unborn children with their bodies dismembered and broken and bloodied and all the rest. The more culturally acceptable way to say it is that these are merely the fetuses that are left behind. As Christians, for the most part, we recognize these things as people. People whose lives have been destroyed at the hands of others. That's what happens in the context of an abortion. But I just want to prepare you, this young lady, who Stephanie Gray, with this group based out of Canada, nonprofit group. She is saying some things and presenting some facts and some truths that I think, as far as I can tell, again, I have only seen video of this lady. I've not spoken with her. It'll be a new experience for me, just like it will be for you, perhaps, as the listener of this program. But she's just laying it on the line in no uncertain terms, not going out of her way to be graphic and explicit and inappropriate or culturally insensitive, but she's not holding back on the truth of the matter. And I think that she is being so forthcoming and so candid about the realities of abortion. I think she is at the point where she will make a lot of American Christians very uncomfortable. Sometimes the truth is very discomforting, wouldn't you say? I mean, scripturally, I think we recognize even from the teachings of Jesus himself, he issued warning after warning about how people will falter with the truth, how people will wilt, how people will become hostile and angry when confronted with the truth. I hope that we, as the American church, collectively speaking, I hope that we will be accepting of this lady as she continues to go about doing what she's doing. But again, her name is Stephanie Gray. She's with the Canadian Center for Bioethical Reform, and she'll be joining us coming up at about 7:30 this morning. So this is going to be very interesting. Again, if you'd like to get a sneak preview and check out what she's about, visit the website unmaskingchoice.ca. And, I mean, let's face it, even staunch abortion advocates in the United States of America don't like saying abortion. Have you noticed that? Abortion advocates go out of their way to avoid using the word abortion, and they have just substituted the word abortion with the word choice. We just advocate choice, and I'll always stand for a woman's right to choose. They never say choose what, but it's choice that they're after, not abortion necessarily, if you listen to their words. But then you look at the policies, you look at the behavior, look at the activity that underlies those words. It's all about abortion. And Stephanie Gray is onto this in a very profound way, unmaskingchoice.ca, if you want to take a look. Now, that said, we have, I believe, something that should be, and I believe is worthy of, some thoughtful discussion among Christians in the United States of America. And it has something to do with, an element of our culture that most of us think is very benign, lots of fun, enjoyable, something that brings Americans together in an otherwise very divided and contentious society that we find ourselves with right now, has to do with professional football. Yes, I know there's a lot of Packers fans and Vikings fans within the reach of my voice, but are you a little uncomfortable with what's going on in the realm of professional football? We'll talk about that coming up just about 10 minutes from now, so stand by. We'll open up the phone lines and get your thoughts on this and so much more. It's Austin Hill in the morning. It's Faith Radio. It's now 6:25.
Friends are telling us what they think of The Voice greeting them in the morning on Faith Radio.
I was calling to say how much we enjoy Austin Hill. It's very informative, really, like that he brings so much news and subjects from all over. It's really refreshing. He's just great.
Austin Hill in the morning, 6 to 8 a.m. each weekday, right here on Faith Radio.
There's a place to grow in your faith and share hope with friends and family, with practical resources and insight for your daily life, and it's right at your fingertips. At MyFaithRadio.com, find the latest podcasts from Faith Radio's original programs. Encourage someone through prayer on PrayerWorks, or be challenged by the latest from our Faith Radio blogging team. It's just a small slice of what's available to you at MyFaithRadio.com. Log on today to find it's not just information, it's transformation.
At Faith Radio, I'm Austin Hill, here weekday morning 6 till 8. Connecting Faith is heard weekdays at 12 noon Central Time here on Faith Radio. Last Friday, on the Friday edition of the program, host Joe Rathmanner spoke with author Annie Downs about her latest book. Her latest book entitled Let's All Be Brave. Here's part of that conversation.
When we're talking about courage with teenagers, it is a little bit different than with adults because, you know, what they're figuring out right now is where they need to sit at the lunch table to have the life they want to have, mm-hmm. you know, or what sports team to be on, or what grades to get, what books to read, what TV shows to watch or not watch. You know, whereas adults, we kind of have our life formulated to some degree, and we're having brave opportunities inserted into that. With teenagers, they are still becoming who they are, and the brave comes in, are they willing to be who they feel like they're supposed to be? So are they willing to be kind to the student that no one else is being kind to because that's their brave move, you know? I spoke at a conference last weekend of teenagers, and they sang the song Oceans. And I said to them, as soon as I got up, I was like, I love that song. I think that song is so good where it says, take me past the trust beyond my borders, you know, and take me deeper than my feet would ever wander. And I just said, I hope if you sing that tomorrow morning at school, you're willing to sit by someone you wouldn't sit by the day before. Because if you're singing that, but you won't go beyond the borders that you feel safe at, socially at school, I'm not sure you're willing to be brave, and I'm not sure you can really sing that song, you know? And so that's what it looks like for teenagers is, who are you becoming? Who are you willing to be around and be kind to? Who are you willing to stand up for and stand up with? And where do you see your life going? And as adults, how can we partner with you online, offline, as you mature in your faith? How can we partner with you and help you to figure out what it looks like for you to be brave?
It is sometimes easy as adults to gloss over those needs that seem so important and those concerns that seem so important to our younger women to, mm-hmm. because we know that in the long run, those things maybe aren't as big of a concern, but we need to acknowledge that they are right now.
When we see teen girls, when they get together and they talk about the mean girl or someone being unkind to them or some piece of gossip that has somehow gotten on Instagram or Snapchat or whatever, and how they are processing that, you're exactly right, that as adults we can go, this too shall pass. This one thing that one person said about you is going to be on the bottom of the birdcage by tomorrow, right? But the same theme of how women treat each other and how we handle when something unkind is said about us and how we stand up for people who get picked on, unfortunately, travels into adult life.
Author Annie Downs speaking with host Joe Rathmanner on Friday's edition of Connecting Faith. Coming up today at 12 noon, Neil Stavem will be hosting Connecting Faith. He'll welcome Gerald Long to the program. Long is the president of Alpha USA. They'll talk about what might need to happen for spiritual revival to take place in the United States of America. Connecting Faith, 12 noon today on Faith Radio. Good morning. It's now 6:29. I'm Austin Hill. The news is next. Good morning, 6:34. This is Faith Radio. And I'm Austin Hill. I'm here weekday morning 6 till 8. This is where we connect faith to life. We seek to be informative, challenging, hopeful, and helpful as you get your day started. Coming up into the 7 o'clock hour, our great friend Dr. Linda Mental, the relationship doctor, she will weigh in. And she's got some new thoughts on what is unfortunately an old and long-standing problem, and that is clinical depression. So Dr. Linda Mental joining us coming up after the news at 7 o'clock this morning. And later in the 7 o'clock hour, you'll meet a very intriguing young lady. She is from Canada, and she is so gut-level honest and direct and forthright about the issue of abortion. She doesn't dance around the issue and say, well, I'm just here to talk about choice or right to choose or what have you. She actually uses the A word, abortion, something that abortion advocates themselves don't even like to use. And she's saying such things in such a candid, forthright way, I think she may very well make a lot of American Christians uncomfortable. Christians who otherwise say, well, I support the sanctity of life and all stages of life and so forth and so on. Anyway, we'll talk to Stephanie Gray from the country of Canada coming up at about 7:35 this morning, so stand by for that. Now, I want to pose a question to you. As a matter of fact, let's just open up the phone lines here. We'll make sure to relinquish the hold if there is one on any of the lines. And you are welcome to weigh in. I invite you to weigh in on this one right now. The number is 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH, if you will. 877-933-2484. My question is simply this. Could it ever be the case that the behavior of professional athletes becomes so bad that you want nothing to do with them, you won't even watch them anymore? I'm asking in particular because of the string of crises, the string of scandals, if you will, within the NFL. And I also raised this question realizing that there are a lot of Green Bay Packer fans within the reach of my voice here on Faith Radio. There are a lot of Minnesota Vikings fans within the reach of my voice here on Faith Radio. And generally speaking, football is, pro football especially, but college football too, very different cultures, a lot of similarities, but a lot of differences as well. Football is just one of those things that is so ingrained in our culture. And for the most part, I want to be very clear in terms of where I stand on this. For the most part, it's a fairly wholesome sort of thing. Football brings people together. It unites people in our society, in our culture, in a time where our culture is incredibly divided and contentious. Americans are set against Americans. It's like the scriptures make reference to brother being set against brother, right? Americans, we're at each other's throats on a whole host of things. So much so that we don't see the enemy that may be attacking us from within or from without. But in any event, despite all that, regardless of one's ethnicity or socioeconomic status or political affiliation, whether they're a Christian, whether they're not a Christian, Americans can get together in a stadium or around a television and watch a football game, enjoy a healthy competition. One team emerges the winner, the other emerges the loser, but we can have our regrets, we can celebrate no matter, but then life goes on and we get back to normal, whatever normal is. That's a societal benefit that professional athletics and even the younger ranks of athletics gives us, a healthy sense of competition. If you compare our society and how we gather around and unite around our favorite football team or favorite baseball team or what have you, and compare it to the way men and their differences and their testosterone and whatever else got settled up in previous societies, in previous points in history, I mean, you know, it wasn't all that long ago. Well, okay, it was centuries ago, where folks gathered in arenas, stadiums, if you will, and watched men wrestle with alligators, and some of them ended up dead. So there is a societal benefit, a very healthy one at that, with professional athletics. I grew up actually hearing a whole bunch of football every Sunday at church. That one of the pastors of a little church that my parents took me to back in my elementary and junior high school days, way back when, he was from Texas. I grew up in Southern California, but the pastor was from Texas, and he had some kind of line about the good old Dallas Cowboys most every Sunday from the pulpit. So it's been ingrained in my life. I've never been much of an athlete. I never played football, not competitively as a kid. I played soccer and other sports. It's just not my thing to play. But I've always grown up watching football on and off. I'm what I would describe as sort of a moderate sports fan. Okay, that's kind of where I'm coming from. Your perception and story about, the degree to which you follow football or enjoy football or what have you may be similar, may be different, but that's where I'm coming from. We have arrived at this point in our culture, in our society, and I guess with the evolution, if you will, of the National Football League, although I think the NFL and what goes on there, all the shenanigans, is kind of a reflection of our society. But we've arrived at a point where the notion that somehow professional athletes are supposed to be role models for our youth, we're well past that. I mean, those days dissipated a good 12, 15, maybe 20 years ago. We started last week with a scenario in which one particular NFL football player, a guy with the Baltimore Ravens, was being suspected of domestic abuse. A video emerged of a player with the Baltimore Ravens having struck his fiance so hard that he knocked her out and she fell to the ground in an elevator, and it looked like some sort of parking structure, what have you. That's where we were at the beginning of last week. 1 week ago today, that item was circling around in the news. By week's end, there was news of a player with the Minnesota Vikings, and he's now been charged with child abuse of one sort or another for using corporal punishment and apparently spanking his own child with some sort of switch, a belt or what have you, and spanked his own child so hard that it apparently left some sort of abrasion on the child's leg. And there's a couple other scandals in between there. And it just strikes me, again, football and NFL is so important and so so prominent in our culture that it's almost unavoidable, whether you're a fan or not, whether you enjoy it or not. But again, this is why I raised the question, could the behavior of the people involved ever become so bad that you just stop watching? You quit buying tickets, you quit being a fan for a period of time. That's what I'm asking here. Because I will tell you, it's real easy for me as a very nominal NFL fan to just click on the TV and enjoy the escape, if you will, the escape from all the contentious things in the world. Just enjoy the entertainment of a football game for a period of time and really care not a whit about the personal lives of the players themselves. But I kind of struggle with this as a moral and ethical dilemma, if you will. I struggle with being a thoughtful Christian in the midst of this environment because the behavior of some of these characters has become absolutely deplorable. And I want to avoid this. I think that the thoughtful Christian can and probably should stay out of the rhetoric and the debate, if you will, the dialogue that goes on in popular culture and in popular media about this. Because in the face of the player at the Baltimore Ravens who was suspected of domestic violence, well, immediately people started weighing in and saying, well, where's Roger Goodell? He's the CEO, basically, of the NFL, the commissioner. People say, well, Roger Goodell should have known about this, and he should have intervened, and he should have fixed this. Look, Roger Goodell is one individual, and the player who's, I'm going out of my way to not mention his name, the player at the Baltimore Ravens, who apparently struck his fiance, he's a different guy. Roger Goodell is only responsible for the household and the marriage and the family that belongs to him. The player at the Baltimore Ravens is responsible for his own behavior. Let's start there. But at some point, you have to ask yourself, I think, is there kind of a culture of immorality, a culture of abuse that really just kind of gets, you know, ignored and passed over in the NFL? Because at the end of the day, the fans really don't care. I mean, there was such an uproar by, Tuesday or Wednesday of last week over this player with the Baltimore Ravens. My goodness, you would have thought that the team was going to close down. But that's not how the fans responded. Fans showed up last Thursday and watched the Baltimore Ravens play. And men and women both went out of their way to purchase T-shirts with the name of the disgraced player on them. I mean, they're showing their support for an NFL player who, again, was suspected of domestic violence and basically beating his wife. So that's the culture that we live in. Our society says the behavior doesn't matter, the behavior of these players. We will continue to buy tickets and T-shirts and paraphernalia and watch on TV. We'll support it because it just meets a need for us. We'll just enjoy it. We'll have fun with it. Just give me my football. That's what the culture says. Give me my football no matter what. How about for you, if you're a football fan or not, could the behavior and the culture that emerges out of pro sports ever become so bad that you just won't have anything to do with it? Tell me what your thoughts are. We'll come back and get the calls. It's 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. It's now 6:45. You're listening to Faith Radio, and I'm Austin Hill. 7 on Faith Radio. Our number 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. I'm Austin Hill. I posed the question in the face of, frankly, a week. The last 7 to 10 days are 7 to 10 days of activity within the National Football League that most every fan, everybody involved in the organization would prefer to ignore and forget. It's been disastrous. Let's be honest about it. No matter how diligent and passionate of a Vikings fan you might be, or a Packers fan, or whatever your team is, whatever you enjoy about NFL, the behavior of multiple players all at once is just appalling. The week started, as I pointed out, with a player with the Baltimore Ravens being suspected of domestic violence and beating his wife, and the week ended with a player with the Minnesota Vikings being charged with child abuse and neglect. At what point does the behavior become so bad that you won't participate in it anymore? You don't want that in your home. You don't want to watch it. I'm not suggesting, by the way, that you necessarily should shut off all this stuff. I'm posing it as a question. I'd like to know what you think. 877-933-2484. Janice is up next in St. Paul with us on Faith Radio 900 KTIS. Janice, welcome to the program. Hello.
Good morning. I think my mind is divided on this. At some point, my mind turns to the idea that they practice these moves at home on human beings. And, of course, I'm revolted by that idea. But, you know, what else revolts me is, what about the public figures and their treatment of their states or the nation or their families or money? And what about, you know, I'm appalled by 4,000 abortions a day. So I'm appalled by a lot of things. And your question is, would I continue, at some point, would I stop watching football or buying tickets or participating in it? I'd have to stop the world and get off in order to avoid all the sin around me.
And so I get that. Your point is very well taken. And in many ways, it's unavoidable, I think, is part of what you're saying, right?
Yes.
Okay, I guess, and I'm with you on that. I you're correct. I mean, the NFL and some of these other things that you're describing that are offensive, they are pervasive. We're surrounded with it. And we can't stop the world and exit the merry-go-round, so to speak. That said, there is a choice to make as to whether or not to put ourselves in front of the TV with the NFL game on. There's a choice, in other words, for us to participate in it or to not participate. That there is a distinction there, I believe. What are your thoughts on that?
I would say this, that these players whose behavior is being brought to light, I certainly wouldn't wear their jerseys. I certainly wouldn't parade around in defense of them. But at this point, I wouldn't stop watching the game either, because of the very reason I said, there is sin all around me. However, if they just hire thugs and to do the beating up on the football field, I'm out of there. I mean, if it just becomes a haven for keeping people out of jail by putting them in sports, I would be out of there in that case.
Yeah. All right. Janice, I appreciate the call. Thanks very much. It's 877-933-2484. I think we have long since abandoned this trite little notion that somehow professional athletes make for good role models, or at least they should be good role models for the children, because young children are so impressionable and all the rest. I never really bought into that myself, even back when I was a much younger man, even before I became a parent, even back when I was a kid myself, quite frankly. I didn't buy into that, because at the end of the day, parents should be the role models. The church needs to be a great influence in the upbringing and the rearing of children. And the cultural icons, who in the world would want to rely upon them, at least in this day and age, to be a positive influence on kids necessarily? On the contrary, it seems to me that we need to be raising our children, teaching our children to have some sort of thoughtful counterintuitive reality-based belief system about the cultural icons around us. I try as a parent to raise my teenage son in such a way that he can look at pro athletes and other entertainers in society, even public figures for that matter, elected officials, and have his own moral compass and be able to say, this is good, that's not so good, this is right, this is wrong. But that said, look, at the end of the day, we've got all this hyperbole going on about the NFL should sanction this player, or should this player be allowed to play again? Should he be traded to another team? Should he be levied a penalty or what have you? At the end of the day, all that stuff really doesn't matter if consumers continue to consume the product that is NFL football. You don't like it? Quit watching. Quit buying the tickets. Quit buying the T-shirts. Quit showering your money on this entity called professional football. And for the most part, as much as people are all up in arms about an NFL player who allegedly beat his wife, another NFL player who legal authorities say beat his child, for all the fussing and hand-wringing and fussing about these kinds of things, consumers in America are in essence saying, we don't care. They're still watching. They're still buying tickets. We saw no precipitous decline in ticket sales over the weekend because of all the scandalous behavior. I do believe, however, that for the thoughtful Christian in an ever-complex society, this is worthy of our consideration. There should be, in my view, some point at which we say, I can't participate in this anymore. Janice's point is well taken, that it's pervasive and it's unavoidable, but at some point we can make the choice to say, no, not for me. Doesn't have to be a boycott. I'm not talking about a big collective effort. I'm talking about individual persons and households and families saying, this isn't for us. It's 6:53. You're listening to Faith Radio. I'm Austin Hill, weekday morning, 6 till 8. When we come back, we'll check in with Susie Larson. Stand by. This is Faith Radio, and I'm Austin Hill, weekday morning, 6 till 8. Live the promise with Susie Larson. You hear that every weekday afternoon, live, real time, at 3 to 5 p.m. Central Time. Last Friday, Susie welcomed to the program author and speaker Carol Kent as they explored the light that God puts inside every believer. Here's part of that discussion.
Suddenly now, Paula's story's been changed. Your story has been changed by her story. And that's sort of what a wildfire does. It just goes. And so explain that dynamic.
Well, and there are two kinds of wildfires. Wildfire in nature is out of control. And it sometimes sets forth a blaze. And we've all heard the stories of firestorms that have been so destructive. But the other kind of wildfire, the faith kind of fire, is the kind that can ignite faith in other people because it is so strong that it stirs the embers of that person who feels like their faith is turning into the ash heap we talked about earlier, and it starts a new fire in somebody else when we share our faith and somebody says yes to Jesus. Just this weekend I was in California speaking at a women's retreat, and I shared the gospel on Friday night, and on Saturday morning I was sitting at a breakfast table. And this young woman said to me, she was in her early 20s, she said, Carol, I prayed with you and I invited Christ into my life last night. Well, her mother had invited her. And her mother turned around. She said, you did? I've been praying for you for years. She said, yes, Mom, I did. I didn't even want to come to this thing, this retreat, but you made me feel like I had to, but I was supposed to be here, and God is starting his faith in my life, and I am just here to say that I'm so glad you brought me here. And I think we want to remind everybody listening to us that all faith, every wildfire faith, begins with a first spark of faith. So if we have people out there saying, hey, I don't even know if I've had the spark, I want you to know God loves you so much that he sent his son Jesus to die on the cross for you, and that he rose again, and that when we by faith say, God, I confess my sin, I receive Jesus as my Savior, that is the beginning of the spark that can become a wildfire faith.
As you're talking, I'm thinking of the passage. It says, a bruised reed I will not break, and a smoldering wick will not snuff out. And I've always pictured his hands cupped around a bruised reed and his hands cupped around a smoldering wick, going, I know you're smoldering, but I'm guarding you to a point where this thing is not going to be snuffed out. And you say that the first step is sometimes just to to reigniting the faith is to be honest with yourself and with God about the true condition of your heart.
Well, we can tell God anything, and he's not going to say, I'm so disappointed in you that you weren't stronger. He is going to embrace our honesty.
Author and speaker Carol Kentz on Live the Promise with Susie Larson. That was just last Friday. Coming up on today's episode, Susie will be joined by theologian Dr. Richard Swenson as they talk about the art of learned contentment. That's today from 3 to 5 p.m. Central Time. Susie Larson, Live the Promise here on the Faith Radio Network. Good morning. It's 6:58. Welcome to Monday. I'm Austin Hill here weekday morning 6 to 8. Thanks for being here. SRN News on the way next.
Start your day connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the morning.
So good morning. It's 7:04. Hope you're not being drenched wherever you may be listening to us this morning on one of our broadcast affiliates. We do have some rainstorms moving across the northern Midwestern regions, but we're glad you're with us. I'm Austin Hill. I'm here weekday morning 6 till 8 as you get your day started as we seek to connect faith to life. And we try to be informative, challenging, hopeful, and helpful along the way. Coming up in just moments, I always look forward to our time together with Dr. Linda Mental, healthcare practitioner. We call her the relationship doctor. And she's got some new thoughts on a very old and, quite frankly, very confining and crippling problem for a lot of people, clinical depression. We'll talk about some of her new insights on that coming up in just a few moments, so stand by for that. Also, in just about half an hour from now, you'll meet a lady from our neighbors to the north, the neighboring country of Canada. Her name is Stephanie Gray, and she's with an organization that's, she's been, based on my calculations, she's somewhere in her early to mid-30s. She's been involved with this group called the Canadian Center for Bioethical Reform most all of her life, quite frankly. And she head-on addresses the issue of abortion. Now, I say this because I just want to point out to you that even here in the U.S. anyway, even some of the most staunch of advocates for abortion rights, advocates for the abortion industry, they go out of their way to avoid saying the word abortion. Most people understand, I think, most people in our culture understand that abortion involves the taking of a life. But if you cast the issue and dress it up in less harsh language, if you call it simply a choice or a woman's right to choose, well, that sounds more appealing. Now, what I'm describing here, that may seem trite to you, but that's a reality. Go talk to people in their late teens and early 20s on college and university campuses around the country and try to engage in a discussion about abortion. They will very quickly, I've done this, by the way, they will very quickly start talking about a choice and a right to choose, and everybody should be free to do what they want with their own body. They won't use the word abortion much. And younger demographics in our society, they have been taught this. That's the world they've grown up with. We don't abortion. Why do we even need to discuss this? We're just here to talk about choice. Well, Stephanie Gray addresses the issue of abortion head on. And if you want to see very vividly, very graphically, very explicitly how she addresses the issue of abortion, you can navigate over to this website. It's called unmaskingchoice.ca. Now, .ca is the URL designation for domain names registered in the country of Canada. That's where the Canadian Center for Bioethical Reform is headquartered, obviously. But unmaskingchoice.ca is a very, very strategically chosen name for a website. And you can check it out and take a look at it yourself. Stephanie Gray will be in studio with us coming up in just about half an hour from now, as I said. She is speaking, actually participating in a debate at University of Minnesota. She'll also be speaking out at St. Cloud State University in Minnesota and at North Dakota State University. I mean, she's making a swing through this region of our country. It's not her country, it's our country. She is a visitor, And I said this earlier last hour. I hope I'm wrong about this, but I need to respectfully and politely say it again. She is so straightforward, not inappropriately so. I'm not saying that she is unduly graphic or what have you, but she is so forthright, so candid, so blunt and honest about the thing called abortion that I think even some American Christians may find her to be, quote-unquote, over the top or maybe a bit offensive. I hope you'll drop your defenses and listen very carefully as she dialogues with us in just about half an hour from now. But that's our friend from Canada, Stephanie Gray, joining us in studio here at Faith Radio in minutes. It's now 7:08. When we come back, some insights, some helpful new information about a longstanding old problem called clinical depression. Our great friend Dr. Linda Mental joins us coming up next. It's now 7:09. You're listening to Faith Radio. Good morning, it's 7:10. This is Faith Radio. I'm Austin Hill. It's time to move on. Can't you just snap out of it? Are you still upset about that thing that happened oh so long ago? Can't you let go? Those are perhaps some of the most unthoughtful responses that a person could elicit in the face of a friend or family member that's struggling with clinical depression. But what exactly is clinical depression? We see high-profile instances where, as we did earlier in the summer, somebody very high-profile like actor Robin Williams commits suicide, and then after the fact we find out that this tormented soul was indeed tormented with some very serious depression issues for many, many years. In the aftermath of Robin Williams' suicide earlier this summer, Christian media, I think in particular, did a very good job addressing that issue and understanding and articulating a message of hope and help. But it shouldn't take a high-profile suicide to get us focused on this issue, at least not in my estimation. Dr. Linda Mental, the relationship doctor, as we like to call her, I always look forward to our discussions with her. She joins us once again on the guest line with some new thoughts on this age-old problem. Dr. Mental, welcome back to the show. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, Austin, it's great to be back with you, and thanks for saying that. I want to say that I was on tour with Ruth Graham for a number of years, mm-hmm. and one of the things that we did is we were trying to go into the churches all over this country with this Ruth Graham and Friends tour that we had, and we would talk about very difficult issues like abortion, like depression, like stress and you know, relationship problems and things that the church typically has a difficult time talking about. And what I was so surprised to hear when Ruth was talking to various churches all over the country, she said there were several churches where she would be in contact with the pastors and talking to them, and they would say, oh, we don't have that problem here in our church.
Oh, boy.
And, you know, the statistics are that 1 in 10 people struggle with depression. And so, yes, I think after this high-profile suicide of Robin Williams, there has been a lot more dialogue. Certainly after Rick Warren's son also committed suicide, there was a lot more talk in the church about depression. And hopefully we're turning that tide, and we're beginning to see that depression isn't something, like you said, you just talk yourself out of. It's a serious disease, it's a disorder, and it's very debilitating, and in the worst cases, it can lead to suicide.
Dr. Linda Mental on our guest line here on Faith Radio. I have heard some people, very well-intended, I'm not here to bash or to be pejorative at all, but I've heard some people within the church, Dr. Mental, and I'm sure you have got an earful of this over the years in your professional endeavors, but some people in the church will sort of try to spiritualize or even theologize, if you will, and work their way out of this depression issue or around the issue by saying, well, listen, you know, scripturally we understand that we are transformed, we are new creatures, we should be walking in the Spirit. They've got all the rhetoric for explaining why some other person should not be feeling or isn't feeling the way that they would appear to be or the way they say they're feeling. And I look at this not as a clinician, but somebody who tries to be thoughtful with the scriptures and has some theological background. I look at this and I think, listen, if we're going to take the doctrine of sin seriously, which we certainly should, We should understand that sin has a negative impact on our physical being, on our bodies, on our emotions. I mean, our bodies, our very beings are imperfect, not just because of things that we have done, but that's the state of the human race. We are fallen and imperfect. So it seems to me there's a theological component to this, but what are your thoughts on that, both as a Christian and a clinician?
Well, I think it's a great point, because part of what we have to understand is exactly what you're saying, the biological issues involved in depression. We know that from studies of genetics that depression tends to run in families. We know that it's a heritable kind of illness. It doesn't mean you're going to necessarily get it if someone in your family has it, but like so many genetic markers, you may be more predisposed with the right environmental triggers to then become depressed. We like to say that the genetics are sort of the loaded gun, and then the environmental stresses or the life traumas and the things that happen to you are sort of what pull the trigger for some people. So I think it is very important to understand that. It's also very important to understand that when someone is depressed, there are brain changes that happen. And those brain changes are significant in terms of how they affect how you feel, obviously your mood, but they also affect how you think. And there is, obviously, so much to do with the thoughts of someone being depressed. Also, I want to make it really clear that there are so many medical conditions that the side effect of those is depression. So you can have Cushing's, for example, or hypothyroidism, or heart disease, or sleep apnea, or strokes, or in the case of Robin Williams, he had Parkinson's. He was recently diagnosed with Parkinson's. One of the fallouts of that is depression. There are a number of hormonal imbalances. So think of all the women in your church that might have postpartum depression based on the hormone changes after the birth of a baby.
Right.
There are depressions that are affected by the lack of sunlight. We're moving into October and into the months where the sunlight gets less, and for some people that changes things in the brain and creates depression. Now, is there a theological side to this? Absolutely. We're body, soul, and spirit, just like you said, Austin. We don't separate those things, and so certainly there is a spiritual component. And at times, and I would say these are the rarer times, but I have seen people where the spiritual sometimes even is the cause of the depression, because they're not living their life consistent with what they believe. So we have
Very
to be really careful
yeah.
to not judge.
Yeah, yeah. No, I appreciate what you're saying. Stand by, Dr. Mental. We'll continue in just moments. This is really, really important stuff. And we'll continue with Dr. Linda Mental, the relationship doctor. She has some new insights on depression. Stand by. We'll continue with her in moments. 7:17 now. This is Faith Radio, and I'm Austin Hill.
News you can use. Connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the morning.
7:19 on Faith Radio. I'm Austin Hill. Coming up just about 15 minutes from now, you'll meet a lady from Canada who is sweeping across the United States, speaking at several American universities, University of Minnesota and North Dakota State University, just a couple on the list, and she's addressing an otherwise taboo topic. We'll let you meet Stephanie Gray coming up at about 7:35 this morning, so stand by. Dr. Linda Mental, the relationship doctor, she's on our guest line now. Put this in context here. She's talking with us about depression. You realize, and Dr. Mental points this out in her latest op-ed piece that we have linked on our website, oftentimes people suffering with Alzheimer's disease, cancer, and AIDS end up with symptoms of depression. Now, I would hope that nobody within the reach of our voices here, Dr. Mental, would look to somebody with cancer or AIDS or Alzheimer's disease and say, shame on you, you must have done something to cause this. But sometimes with depression, we look at those who are suffering and say, well, snap out of it, and why haven't you gotten over this? And you left us moments ago with something very important. You said, we need not judge. Tell us more about that.
Well, let me give you two examples, I think, of real life examples that really might help. Mm-hmm. I was going to a church, but it was actually my church, and there was a person in the service who got very disruptive and was uncontrollably crying and then was getting more and more out of control. The elders, rightfully so, you know, kind of got her, took her aside. After the service, there were several people that were around her and were praying for her and just really didn't know what was going on. She just was very uncontrollably crying and sort of out of control, and everybody was, you know, praying praying over her rightfully, which is what we do in churches, and we should pray all the time. And so they were praying over her, and things were just not changing and shifting. So they called me over, and they said, would you, and I was praying quietly in the back and asking the Lord for some discernment, what's going on here?
Mm-hmm.
And so I went over to her, and I really felt prompted, I think, by the Holy Spirit to ask her family member, I said, has there been any change lately in any kind of medication? Is she on any medication for any kind of health reason? And has there been a change? And they said, well, actually, yes. I went and called the pharmacist and said, is depression a side effect of this medication? He said, absolutely. And I described her symptoms. He said, bring her in, get her off the medication, take her to take her to the doctor, urgent care,
right.
Get her off the meds. Got her off the meds, she was fine. A second case, treating a lady, was very depressed. I mean, could not shake herself out of it, was going to her singles group in her church, was just not getting better. I did everything I knew to do, all the treatments, standard treatments for depression. Nothing was getting better. Again, I was like, okay, God, what am I missing here? What's going on with this woman? I thought to ask her. She was about 2 years divorced. She was in a singles group at her church, and I looked at her and I said, okay, I'm going to ask you a really tough question. Are you sleeping with somebody in your singles group?
Oh, boy.
And she kind of looked at me and went, yeah. And I said, you know what? Here's the prescription. Stop doing what is against your value system, against your beliefs, and let's see what starts to happen with the depression and work through that. And, of course, there was the loss of her marriage, but then she had connected in a way that she did not believe was morally right and was living. So in that case, there was a strong spiritual element to this, and it was a big part of the treatment. So you can't just look at somebody and say, oh, you know, they just need to get better. And what was so helpful, I think, the other day, I was on a national radio show talking about depression too, and a caller called in and he said, I want to tell you what depression feels like. I can't get out of bed. I can't go to my job. All I see is a dark tunnel. I want to be in a better place, and I can't seem to pull myself out of it. It was a very compelling story. And what he said to the people listening is he said, please understand, this is not something I just can will myself out of.
Mm-hmm.
I've tried, but I need some help. And so, of course, he was getting some help, and that's what we need to encourage people to do is
sure.
Don't live in that stigma that somehow you're weak. Because it's just like diabetes, you know, you can't will yourself out of diabetes.
Right.
You can
take
the insulin.
Sure. Yeah. No, we recognize that we need medications with other types of illnesses, and we don't, we encourage people to go see this medical professional, a physician,
yeah.
or whatever it takes. But with depression, sometimes we get a little sideways with that.
Yeah.
Dr. Mitchell, for the pastor or the lay ministry leader in a church that's listening to this right now, and hearing what you're saying and yet thinking, gosh, if somebody were to come to me and say, I'm depressed and I can't get out of bed in the morning. Suppose somebody that works on a church staff or volunteers at a church gets a call like that. What do you recommend that they do?
Well, I would certainly listen to them. That's the first step, and take what they're saying very seriously and pray with them. And again, I don't want to diminish the power of prayer in people's
sure.
life. There's a lot of scripture that says put on praise for the spirit of heaviness, the garment of praise for the spirit of heaviness, and encouraging people with when you're weak, God says that He is strong, and God says He'll always make a way. So these scriptures are very encouraging, very hopeful. But send them to a physician. Help them to get a physical, and then encourage them to get the help with a Christian counselor or a Christian therapist, because there's tremendous treatment for people. People do get better, and then they can live in the vibrancy and the joy of the Christian life that was there for them to live.
Professor, author, and the relationship doctor, Dr. Linda Mitchell, some new insights on, unfortunately, an age-old problem called depression. There's help available. We need to be proactive and take the steps towards it. Dr. Mitchell, as always, thanks so much. We look forward to speaking again.
All right. Take care. Thank you.
Thank you. 725, it's Faith Radio that you're listening to. When we come back, Breakpoints. Find out what's going on with John Stone Street and Eric Metaxas next. Good morning, it's 7:35. This is Faith Radio, and I'm Austin Hill here weekday mornings 6 till 8. This is where we connect faith to life weekday mornings as you get your day started. We seek to be informative, challenging, hopeful, and helpful. Still to come, SRN News again at the top of the hour, 8 o'clock. What's going on in the debate over abortion on America's secular college and university campuses? Well, in a very literal sort of way, very serious way, there isn't a whole lot of debate. It's a foregone conclusion that people support a right to choose. That's another facet of this. The A word, abortion, rarely gets brought up, even by some of the most staunch supporters of abortion. The word is avoided. The word choice is substituted for abortion. And it's just understood that everybody on a secular college or university campus, everybody who's truly an enlightened individual, supports choice. End of statement. Joining us in studio, a lady from Canada. She's a native of Vancouver, British Columbia, now living in the province of Alberta. And she speaks to college and university students across our country and hers and elsewhere around the world. And she actually introduces the word abortion into the discussion. Stephanie Gray is here at Faith Radio. And Stephanie, welcome to Minnesota. Thanks so much for joining us. Good to see you.
Thank you so much, Austin. It's great to be on your program.
You seem to be leading with the word abortion here. While so many of us here in the United States want to just talk about choice and kind of leave it at that, your website is entitled unmaskingchoice.ca. Why do you lead with the A word, so to speak?
Great question. You know, one thing we've learned from abortion advocates is the power of language, and they've used that to their advantage, and so we're going to start using it to our advantage and really create a situation in which we are defining the terms that abortion supporters use in the abstract, like you pointed out, choice. You know, if I said to someone, I support a woman's right to take, the logical response would be, take what? It's a grammatically incorrect sentence. And so the same is true with choice. If I say I support a woman's right to choice, we need to define what the choice is. And so by using the word abortion and then defining it further as an act which dismembers and decapitates and disembowels the body of a baby, suddenly you hear that and think, oh, that's not a choice I can support in good conscience.
I mentioned this last hour. I was perusing your website, unmaskingchoice.ca. And by the way, if you're not aware of this, .ca is the domain name configuration in the country of Canada.
That's
CA,
right.
Yeah, designating Canada. But unmaskingchoice.ca is the website. And Stephanie, I was perusing your website a few days ago. And when you use these words dismember and disembody and whatnot, you have photographs, not all over the website, but they're there on the homepage. In fact, I noticed one particular photo of a little baby, an unborn child, that's been smashed to pieces, basically, covered in blood. And the caption on the photo says something to the effect of, here's your choice, or something to that effect. And I said this on the air here on this program last hour. I said, this guest of ours, Stephanie Gray, is so forthright, so straightforward. I think she will probably make some American Christians a little uncomfortable. Those of us who say we stand for the sanctity of life. What sort of blowback, shall we say, have you gotten from the Christian community at times?
You know, there are some people who share our view that abortion is wrong but are uncomfortable with our way of communicating that message by way of using abortion victim photography. And our point simply is this: victim stories have a right to be told. And the victims of abortion cannot tell their stories on their own the way a victim of a drinking and driving accident can stand before a high school audience with a burned, scarred body and tell her story. And so because the preborn child cannot tell the tale of what happened to her, we do that for the child by taking the visual reality to the public. And what we find is that as upon the public seeing such imagery, they change their minds on abortion. In fact, I've held in my arms a baby boy whose mom was scheduled to abort him, and upon seeing abortion victim photography, canceled her appointment and invited two of my colleagues to the hospital when she gave birth.
Stephanie Gray, she is with an organization we'll tell you more about coming up in just a few moments, the Canadian Center for Bioethical Reform. She's got some speaking engagements here in the upper Midwestern states. We'll let you know about that in just a few moments. I want to point out again that our guest, Stephanie Gray, she says that she's well attuned to the power of language. Our culture says choice. Stephanie Gray says abortion. Our culture says fetus. You use some very powerful language there, Stephanie. Abortion victims.
Yes.
When you're on a secular college or university campus and you're speaking to young people in their late teens, their early 20s, They've never heard this language before in many cases. How does that conversation go?
It's actually very interesting when you use language people aren't familiar with, such as even abortion victim photography. I had a secular reporter stop me and say, excuse me, sorry, what did you just say? How did you refer to your images? And, mm-hmm. you know, she wrote it down in detail. I also refer, thanks to an audience member's suggestion, to the preborn child as the youngest of our kind, which really just points out the only difference between them and us is one of age. And when you start to use that language, it affects people as they're hearing it, so that when they ask questions, they're now, you could say, influenced by a new framing, which makes it harder to defend abortion when it's defined so clearly and the humanity of the child is articulated so clearly.
Mm-hmm. You enter into secular college and university environments. Do you do this primarily as individual speaking engagements? You stand at a podium and talk. You maybe show some videos, some multimedia. Do you do debates? Do you do all of the above? What exactly do you do?
Yeah, I do all of the above. This week at the University of Minnesota, we'll be doing the Genocide Awareness Project, where we compare victims of abortion to victims of historical atrocities. I also do debates, and in fact, my first debate against an abortionist was here in Minnesota at the University of Minnesota several years ago against Dr. Barham, an abortionist in the Woodbury area. And we also give lectures and presentations, and not only on secular campuses, but also Christian campuses. I'll be giving a chapel session at Westmont College in Santa Barbara, California in the spring.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. What sort of opposition do you hear from people? I mean, I'm shocked to learn that the University of Minnesota is even allowing a discussion comparing victims of global atrocities, genocide, if you will, to victims of abortion. I mean, where I've been with secular academia, and I've been out of the academy for quite some time, but where I've been, that's not even an issue. They have defined things distinctively differently from the way you're defining them. I think you're far more accurate and truthful in the way you've defined things. But how did this come about, comparing genocide victims to abortion victims?
Mm-hmm. You know, our American affiliate, the Center for Bioethical Reform, had basically created this idea in the mid-90s as a result of studying social movements throughout history, as well as the kind of psychology that influences human rights violations, which often, before the injustice itself in terms of the murder is happening, there's a dehumanizing language that is put into place beforehand, so that once people in their minds have made the victim inferior, the natural consequence is an attack directly on the victim's life. And so because our society today all agrees that the Holocaust was wrong and the Rwandan genocide was wrong, we tap into that understanding, starting with common ground. I agree with you, those are wrong. Let's come to an understanding why, because it violates human rights, and then take that common ground and then apply it to the issue of abortion, showing it's just another example of a violation of human rights.
That's very interesting. Has the American vernacular and the language that we use here in the U.S. and perhaps your country of Canada as well, has it defined the unborn child or even the sick person in a hospice bed? Has our language defined those people as something less than fully human?
Mm-hmm. You know, I've debated people on so many occasions who refer to the preborn child as a parasite, which is certainly very dehumanizing language, although what I always like to do is...
You've sat in a room or perhaps side-by-side with somebody who says the unborn child is a parasite.
I've been on a panel with a philosophy professor in front of 200 university students who called the preborn child a parasite. So, yes, unfortunately, this very dehumanizing language is front and center in the debate, and certainly on the side of abortion supporters. And what I always like to do is pull out my phone and say, well, let's look up at the definition of parasite. And the first definition is a species who relies on the host of another species. So right away, that doesn't apply to the preborn child because they're the same species as their mother.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second definition is more to refer to humans who take advantage of other humans, but it refers to a person who takes advantage of another person. So if we're going to apply that definition, it's at least conceding that the parasite, so to speak, is a person. But moreover, I think we need to make the point that the preborn child is not unfairly taking advantage of someone else's body in the way an infant or a two-year-old isn't unfairly taking advantage of someone else's body, but is relying on another human, as is in our designs as human beings who have younger children who rely on older adults. That's normal, and that's a beautiful thing, not something to be kind of characterized in a very negative way.
Stephanie Gray, she is our in-studio guest here at Faith Radio. She's with the Canadian Center for Bioethical Reform. She's speaking at several universities across the United States, several here in our upper Midwestern region. We'll continue with her in just a moment. I'll ask her if she thinks the corner is being turned as it regards the sanctity of life in our culture. Stand by for more. It's 7:45. This is Faith Radio. I'm Austin Hill. Morning at 7:46. Faith Radio is right here. Thank you for listening, and we appreciate you being with us live, real time, weekday morning, 6 till 8. Find us anytime at myfaithradio.com. Stephanie Gray is with the Canadian Center for Bioethical Reform. She's speaking at several universities, several here in the upper Midwest over the next several days. Stephanie, she goes out to speak to secular college and university campuses and engages in a discussion, thoughtful discussion on her end anyway, over the issue of abortion. She dares to use the word abortion when the culture defines such practices as merely a choice. What is the most hostile situation you've ever found yourself in? I guess what I'm getting at is, how bad does it get when you go to try to speak the truth in otherwise hostile territory?
Mm-hmm. It can, unfortunately, get bad. Certainly, as you point out, I'm always civil, but unfortunately not always my audiences. Two incidents come to mind. One, Goucher College in Maryland. At the beginning of my speaking career, around 2003, I had an armed police officer who escorted me to my car following the presentation with a very hostile crowd that I had to walk through to even get into the room. And then back in Canada, I also had to have police protection, both uniformed and undercover police. Even when I had to go to the bathroom, I had to be escorted to the bathroom by a female police officer who waited outside. And there was such a concern that the audience was going to be extremely hostile, and to some extent they were, but we didn't have to use the actual escape plan that had been planned out, and they'd walked me through should things have gotten beyond control.
Have you ever been injured in the process of addressing this issue?
I have not, thankfully.
Okay. What got you started with addressing this very important and yet brutally painful topic?
Good question. You know, I was raised in a family in which both my parents cared deeply about the issue. My mom volunteered at a pregnancy help center, and as a young child, I would accompany her when she did counseling. And then when the girls that she counseled carried to term, I'd go to the hospital with her and see their newborn babies. And then in my first year of college, I actually heard an American speaker who came to Canada by the name of Scott Klusendorf. And Scott gave a phenomenal presentation in which he said there are more people working full-time to kill babies than there are working full-time to save them.
Mm.
And it was like the Holy Spirit grabbed my heart that weekend and said, you are going to work full-time to save babies. And so Scott mentored me from a distance. I finished my undergraduate degree at college. And when I completed that in 2002 with Scott's mentorship and encouragement to partner with the Center for Bioethical Reform, started the Canadian CBR in 2001, 2002, and have been doing that ever since.
The Canadian Center for Bioethical Reform is what you're referring to.
Exactly. Unmaskingchoice.ca.
What would you want... what would you want the layperson listening to us right now, or a member of the clergy, a pastor, minister, what have you, what would be maybe one or two important things that the rest of us, you would want us to grab onto them real quickly about this issue, about the debate? And again, I use the word debate loosely because in many ways, among the power structures of American culture, media, arts and entertainment, academia, there is no debate. Everybody supports, quote unquote, the right to choose, and it's past tense and get over it and move on. What would you want us to know in terms of, information, but also action steps that we could take?
Right. You know, in the Great Commission, we're told not only to make disciples of all nations, but we often forget that second part, which is to teach people all that God has commanded. And so God has very clearly commanded us to not shed innocent blood. We see throughout the scriptures in the Old Testament God's hate, his hate about child sacrifice. And he abhors it, you know, we see in the scriptures. And I would say that abortion is modern day child sacrifice. And so we have a duty to love the least. And the preborn child are the least. They are the most vulnerable, who cannot defend themselves. And just as in the story of the Good Samaritan, we see to help the vulnerable is the command that we are to follow, not to walk by on the other side as the priest and the Levite did.
Mm-hmm.
So, too, we need to really love the vulnerable preborn child. And so if people go to unmaskingchoice.ca, in the Get Active section, the pro-life classroom, they can be equipped with how to defend the pro-life view and how to take that message to their churches, their schools, and their family and friends.
You'll be speaking at several colleges and universities here in the U.S. You have an upcoming date, as I understand it, on the calendar at the University of Minnesota. Am I right about that?
Yes. So today and tomorrow we're at the University of Minnesota with the Genocide Awareness Project, and over the lunch hour I will be doing an open microphone session where students passing by can ask questions. And then in Mankato on Wednesday I'll be doing a three-hour training session on how to defend the pro-life view.
And is it you or one of your associates that will soon be speaking at North Dakota State University?
Yes, so then my colleague, Devorah Gilman, will be speaking at North Dakota State University next week when we carry on with our tour.
How do you respond, Stephanie Grade, to the person who says, well, okay, she showed up here at the University of Minnesota or St. Cloud State or wherever it is, and she says she wants to talk about the right to life. She's just pushing her religion on us. This is just a religious agenda, and she has no right to force her religion on me. How do you respond to that?
You know, although a religious case can be made against abortion, as I just did a few moments ago with some brief references to the scriptures, we would say that the case can be made to a secular culture, because you can be an atheist and still think it's wrong to kill two-year-olds. So you can be an atheist and think it's wrong to kill Jews in the Holocaust. So we simply put forward the idea, if you believe in human rights, then humans get human rights. And since the parents of the preborn child are human, then who they produce is going to be human. Therefore, if you believe in human rights, their offspring get the same human rights that the parents get.
There you go again, using logic. We're very illogical. I'm saying that with tongue firmly planted at you. But we live in such an illogical culture. Quite frankly, as an American, I would have to say that our American culture is far less given to logic than your Canadian culture is. I think we're worse at that. Do you get people looking at you with confused expressions saying, I didn't follow all of that?
Well, you know, we do, but I unfortunately see it in both countries. People say, I don't get that. And I often find, and I go through this in my training sessions, that not only do we have a problem of the head where people just don't get things, we also have a problem of the heart where there's a block up because of someone's experience or their loved one's experience with abortion. So at unmaskingchoice.ca, people can learn about how we really reach people's heads and their hearts on this sensitive issue.
Her name is Stephanie Gray. She is a courageous lady with the Canadian Center for Bioethical Reform. Find out more. Get to unmaskingchoice.ca. She is from Alberta. She is here in the Upper Midwest touring and speaking. Stephanie Gray, thanks for spending some time with us. God bless you in what you're doing. We look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thanks so much.
It's now 7:55. This is Faith Radio. We embrace logic to a degree anyway. Our program continues. Don't go away. Good morning. It's 7:56. This is Faith Radio, and we appreciate your listening. Thank you for partnering with us, by the way. I mentioned this earlier this morning, but let me say again a very heartfelt thank you if you stepped up and came on board as a supporter with us with Faith Radio in the course of last week during our Fall Share fundraiser event. It was a very, very humbling experience. For folks, many of whom offered their support, not financially, but even in words as well, in terms of what you're hearing on this morning program, what you're hearing with Connecting Faith, with Neil Stavem, from our Bible teaching programs, from Susie Larson with Live the Promise. We are trying to do diligence and do right by the calling that we believe God has placed upon us, but also by those whom we serve. Thank you for stepping up. You can always come on board with us and become a supporter at myfaithradio.com. That's our place in cyberspace. Just log on. It's myfaithradio.com. And by the way, you can always find our program contents, audio from our shows and from our guests. You can download it. You can click to listen right then and there. It's always available to you at mypageradio.com. Coming up on tomorrow's edition of Austin Hill in the Morning, our great friend Abdu Murray, author of a book called Grand Central Questions. He is a man, if you're familiar with Abdu Murray, he's a man who was raised in the Islamic faith. He is now an evangelical Christian. He speaks eloquently and forthrightly, and I would say courageously, to issues pertaining to Christian-Islam relations. And we'll talk with him again coming up tomorrow morning on the program. Also, our great friend, Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, retired from the United States Army, now with the London Center for Public Policy Research. He's also with the Center for Advanced Defense Studies. This is a man who is actively involved, has a robust career training military personnel and training people who are involved in national defense issues on behalf of our country. We'll get, actually, I'll be asking Abdu Murray and Tony Schaefer both about their responses, their assessments of yet another heinous beheading of a Westerner, a Brit, over the weekend at the hands of ISIS terrorists. We'll get to that. Also, Mike Haley from Focus on the Family talking about what to do when kids don't come with instructions. All this and more on tomorrow's edition of our program. Thanks for listening. Have a great day and visit us at myfaithradio.com. We'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Austin Hill in the Morning. For more information about this, you can visit Austin Hill in the Morning, our program page, on myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com.